You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listening to the Cricket Podcast.
I think it was a disgraceful performance, and I think it should never be permitted to happen again.
That is very good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast for our review of the first day of the fourth test between India and England. I'm Jack Hope. And as usual, I'm joined by Ross Legg. How are you doing, Ross?
Excellent, thank you, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. And Max Rowe Brown. How are you doing, Max?
Hello, yeah, very well, thank you.
Good. We've had a busy day with 11 wickets and over 200 runs. Quick first thoughts, though, boys. Who do you think is on top, Ross?
It was great strides, isn't it, for England? Made it past the big 200 mark for the first time in five innings. Up we go. But I think it looked like a decent batting track. The umpires, I think, probably had a decent day. I think it's India. India are on top.
Max, same question for you.
Yeah, nothing more to add on that, really. I'd say comfortably India at this stage.
Yeah, and I think that makes three of us. Although England took one wicket, didn't they? Ross, before we get into the main body of the show, do you want to give our listeners and viewers some quick tips?
Yep, you should like us just below on YouTube and subscribe, as well as follow us on at the Cricket Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Good work, Ross. There's a poll up at the moment for like best podcast, and we want to win that.
Ever.
So go over there.
Best podcast ever.
Yeah, follow us and vote for us as well. Talking points then, fellas. Well, actually, we'll do first. Max, do you want to give us a summary of the day?
Yeah, I'll rattle through it quickly. So England this time in the fourth test decided to take a leaf out of the Indian book of selection and extend their batting lineup, which... ultimately, it worked quite well when we nearly doubled our first innings run total in this game. Unfortunately, double not very much is still not very much. Started fairly badly after having won the toss with Crawley and Sibley playing very different shots in style, but very similar shots in aptitude, leaving us, what, 30 for 3? Middle order fight back though by Ben Stokes, Ollie Pope, Dan Lawrence, sort of and some runs from Bairstow as well brought England back into what looked like they might squeak. Looked like we were going to be comfortably over 200, and then as is customary, it all went wrong, and in England skittled out for a below par score, you would say. Came back and took a good early wicket of Shubman Gill via James Anderson, but India dug in for the remainder of the evening session, and here we are.
Good work, Max. It was an interesting one. I mean, England aren't as out of this game as they were probably the last two at this point. So that, Ross, as you sort of said, is a step forward. Should we have a quick chat about the selection? Because England, Max, they really did mix it up, didn't they? Out went Broad and Archer, and in came Bess and Lawrence. England played seven frontline batters plus Folks. I think this would have been a great team for the third test. Don't you, Max? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's, shutting the stable door after the horse is bolted, that comes to mind. I think we made a joke on the last show that maybe India should pick 11 batsmen to secure the draw. I didn't think England might go down that route. But I think they've tried to second guess, haven't they? The whole pitch chat, England have been so determined not to discuss the pitch, but the media have done it all for them, and it's clearly got into their heads, and they've gone a bit weird. But having said that, all the batsmen that you might have left out scored a few runs, so...
I think what's really important to note is that, as we know, throughout sporting history, the sign of a good side is one that wildly lurches from one selection type to the other. Like that's just classic, isn't it? So you see the greats really do that. So it's nice to see them batting all the way down to 11 and all the way down to 9 in this test, and picking four number 11s in the last one. So.
Yeah, you know, tactics. We had a few questions about this. Prashanth on Twitter, did England get their selection wrong in this series? Ross, you can answer that one.
Yes.
Yeah. I think, you know, the first test it was probably right. And then after that, so it was probably wrong, is how I would say.
It's almost like the confidence went to their head and they were just like, we are ahead of the game here. We can outsmart India in their own conditions because we did it in the first test.
I would say, though, that I don't think England have the personnel to select their way out of probably losing the series 3-1. I think they could have picked anyone and probably we'd have seen the same results, just maybe not as one-sided. The topic of the second seamer came up a couple of times as well. So Shivansh and Karan, both basically asking the same thing. Should England have picked two seamers here, or are you happy? Are we happy with what England decided to do, Max?
I don't actually mind it so much. We have the beauty of having Ben Stokes in your team is that you just have that extra level of flexibility in your lineup. And I think I mentioned in the last show that maybe it was something we could think about doing. I didn't for the life of me think we'd actually do it, but I don't mind going with two seamers. It's what India have done the entire of the last few games. But I would have likes to see a spinner, an extra spinner in there rather than putting the batsman in.
I think you'll find that Dan Lawrence has been picked as a spinning all-rounder, Max, and we'll see some of his tweakers come into play here.
I would be absolutely shocked if Joe Root bowls Dan Lawrence behind himself.
Yeah, we did sort of say, didn't we, on the preview show that we might have liked to have seen them try one of the leg spinners just for a little bit of variation.
Well, we do have Dom Sibley.
We do have Dom Sibley. Dom Sibley bowled a hilarious over against Pakistan, but in first-class cricket, he actually has taken some wickets, believe it or not. I don't know if that says something about Dom Sibley or first-class cricket, but...
England's players against spin.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe. I think you might be right, Max. I mean, I think that two seamers, if anything, that sort of hedges your bets the right way. I mean, it probably is going to spin at some point, isn't it? Maybe if you had to bowl first, because we did see Siraj bowl quite well.
Yeah.
And maybe if you had to bowl first, it would be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, but I think it was a risky selection based on the toss, but...
Well, yeah, at least we followed the game plan this time. Last time we picked a team to bowl them out, won the toss and batted first. At least this time we picked a team to bat them out of the game, batted first, just didn't go to plan.
Yeah. Let's talk about that batting then. Ross, where do you want to start?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's really important to mention that India have played really well today. I think that they got their bowling plans right on. And it's a classic of their depth in talent they've got. Ishant Sharma wasn't really kind of hitting the mark as he wanted to, but Siraj comes into the side and has played brilliantly, bowled if not better than Bumrah has done in the series so far. And he's got it's a great thing to see for India. In terms of England's batting, I mean, as I said at the top of the show, they don't have any excuses around the umpiring. They don't have any excuses about the pitch. This was a chance for them to really hit some runs.
No pink ball.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit here where, three or four of them got a start and genuinely threw it away. So it's probably a poor performance with a bat.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. I maybe laying all the blame at England's door is wrong on this occasion. I think most of the Indian bowlers, what they did really well was bowl to plans. I mean, let's take, this isn't in chronological order, but let's take the dismissal of Joe Root. Now, if you've watched England over the last 2 years or 3 years or most of Root's career, you'll know that he is quite vulnerable to the ball that's full, comes back in, pins him on the back pad. And that is, if you watch the sequence of play building up to that Root wicket, Siraj bowls a couple that are wide off stump and move away. Then he tries to get one to come back in. It's a little bit too short, hits Root on the hip. And then he finally gets it right. And we see Root sort of doing that thing where his head falls over and he's pinned LBW. Now that, if you hadn't seen Root over the last couple of years, you might just think that that was a good period of play. But I think actually what that is, was Siraj and the India team coming up with a plan and executing it pretty perfectly. And they did that to a couple of the other England batters as well. Maybe we should go back to the chronology, though, and talk about the openers, because they got through the tricky opening six overs before, or opening five overs before we saw Axar come into the attack. And immediately he did some damage, didn't he, Max?
Yes, it was the age-old tale of Axar bowling the ball and the ball's going in a straight line. It's unplayable, clearly. I mean, Dom Sibley has played, he's gone for a Johnny Bairstow-sized gate around that, and it was just a poor bit of batting. And as for, well, Zach Crawley was just a bit of a strange mental process, I think, to play that shot.
Carry on, Max.
Departing slightly from the chronology is that England overall, in the context of the last two games, have been much better in their approach to playing Axar in particular, by using the pitch and trying to get down it, sort of being proactive or aggressive in their defence. Fine with the moving of the... Well, I mean, we'll get on to the fact that it only takes a lapse of concentration for it to all go wrong. But I mean, in terms of moving your feet and coming down the wicket, I don't have an issue with that. Just the rest of it.
So I think there's a couple of things there, Max. One on Crawley. Crawley clearly has a big problem with left arm spinners.
Yes.
There's no doubt that he needs to, you know, go to the nets.
Kevin Pittsonitis.
Spend some time with Jack Leach getting like not bad left arm spin, because it's ridiculous. Like he every single time anybody comes on who can bowl left-handed, it's over. on the point of running down the wicket, did you know, Max, and I think this was England's game plan, and I think you picked up on it quite well. Before today, England has scored 44 runs off 22 balls going down the pitch to Axar. They managed to correct that slightly, though, today. Two of them were out going down the pitch to Axar. So, you know, on the one hand, probably a good game plan. On the other, either Axar's done something to F it up for England,
or we just did it more. It's more opportunity for wickets.
Well, or England executed it badly. I mean, I think at least in the case of Lawrence, well, in the case of both of them, let's be honest, they weren't probably there for the shot that they ended up
Lawrence's shot was awful.
Yeah, I think Andrew Strauss did it quite well. He said it's actually a really high risk shot, that one. So actually coming down the track where the ball is spinning away from you from the left hander, especially someone at Axar's pace, is always going to be a high risk. And I think early on in their innings, I mean, Dan Lawrence was set, but it is still not the shot that they should be playing, and probably just a bit of inexperience coming through there.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I reckon they decided that's what they were going to do, and then did it without really thinking about why deciding they were going to do it. Yeah, well, I think Dan Lawrence in particular. Dan Lawrence didn't look like he was going to get out to Axar Patel, letting straight ball go through the gate. So I understand you want to put some pressure on Axar, because Axar's like his skill, is putting the ball in the same place over and over again. And sometimes the tactic you have to deploy as a batsman is to disrupt that so that you don't get pinned, basically. So, I mean, if you think that ball over and over again is eventually going to get you out, then you need to stop him bowling that ball. You see Stokes do it all the time in England when he goes down the wicket to sort of those medium quick bowlers. He did it to Abbas loads in the summer. And that's just to get Abbas to do something differently. So I think Lawrence is probably in his head thinking, I can't let Axar bowl at me because he will get me out. But I don't think on this pitch that was the case. I think if we're being honest, this was like a 350, 400 minimum batting first pitch.
I won't be surprised if India go on and score some big runs at this
game. I think Rohit Sharma is going to make it look like an absolute road.
Let's talk really quickly then about the good performances from England, because it wasn't all one-way traffic. I mean, India were on top. They clearly had the better of the day. But Lawrence and Stokes, at different points in the match, did look like they might wrestle a bit of control back for England or leave things slightly more in the balance at the end of the day. Ross, were you impressed with both of them?
Yeah, Stokes didn't get out to Ashwin, so well done, Stokesy. It was a clobbered in for a big old six, which was nice to see. I think Lawrence looked quite assured, actually. He played some really nice shots and he was very confident. And I think that comes from that youthful exuberance, really, of going, do you know what? This is my game. I'm going to trust it. And I love the kind of wristy cover drive that he has. Like, I wouldn't even know where to start playing that shot. It's absolutely brilliant. What I can say as well is that Johnny Bairstow didn't look absolutely horrendous, did he? After his back-to-back zeros. But again, like, he's not good enough to be playing in this test team. However, he was very, very unlucky. And
That's a good. I think just to balance things out, I've dived in here for no reason, really. Just to say, a couple of the England batters were a bit unlucky. Bairstow was the main unlucky guy, but Pope as well, sort of kneeing the ball up in the air. You don't often get out like that, do you?
No. Well, Bairstow, I thought, was quite unlucky because if you didn't see it, it was given out caught behind. He reviews it and he's hit his thigh. But because he's been given out on the field for kind of caught behind, umpire's call is still in play. So the ball is literally clipping the top of the bails. And it's a quite a harsh decision, I think.
Yeah, I think the rules there aren't quite right, are they? You can't be having umpire's call on a decision for a different wicket. That's not quite... doesn't seem to fit, does it?
I to be honest, I think that the rule's fine. I don't think you can get into too many technicalities there. I think the umpire's given him out. We don't necessarily know why. If you were an Indian fan though, and they'd said that wasn't out when ball tracking is showing that it's hitting and clipping or hit where it is hitting stumps according to ball tracking, then you would be angry. You wouldn't be like, well.
I'm not sure I would be angry. I think I agree with Max.
If it's been made clear that the wicket's been given for caught behind and he doesn't think it's LBW, then you wouldn't have any.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more binary than that, though. I think it's you're either given out or not given out, and then the third umpire's job is to decide whether the decision on the field, the binary out or not out decision, should be maintained or not. And he's gone through the whole process. We've been talking this whole series about them doing the process correctly. And they've gone through the process correctly. And unfortunately for Bairstow, look, he is unlucky. I'll say that. But unfortunately for Bairstow, the ball is hitting the stumps. So he has to be out.
I think if the umpire had given it out LBW, I would have been... It didn't look that great. I would have not complained about that being given on the field as an LBW. But I just think like you, I don't think it is that binary. I think if you're an umpire, you're making a decision based on a method of dismissal.
But then, right, we're going to get sidetracked here. But let's go back to how this process would work. So what were you saying that the umpire?
I'm saying the process is wrong.
The umpire would then they'd say it's not out caught behind. Do you want to give him out LBW? Is that what there's some dialogue here? I mean, how is this? Because that's going to give the game away a little bit that it might be out LBW. So the umpire, like I think the way it works, sometimes you're going to get some unfortunate decisions. Probably Bairstow's is one of them, but I don't think you can really argue that it definitely wasn't out because ball tracking showing it's hitting the stumps. Anyway, let's draw a line under that because I'm sure like the number of umpiring chats we've had in this series so far, I'm sure we'll get the chance again at some point over the rest of the test. There are a couple of interesting-ish stats. Ashwin v. Pope. Does anyone want to guess Pope's average?
10.
8.
No, 11.75. So
It's going up.
He was unlucky, wasn't he? Especially when you think coming down the wicket is part of the reason to do that, takes short leg out of the game.
I thought he played actually a good test innings there. I genuinely thought he'd played himself in, he was moving his feet, looking a bit more confident, and it is an unbelievably unlucky dismissal. I've never seen anything like that in my life. It's a come down the track, bat is way in front of his body, clips his edge, hits the back of his back leg pad, and then pops up to Gill, who's got the easiest short leg catch of all time. It's unbelievable.
It was pretty ridiculous. Another thing, England, six of England's 25 lowest test scores away in India have happened during this series, which is pretty good going, considering England have only batted eight times.
that's good effort.
We had one question, one more question in from Anoop on this, and I think this is more about England's technique. Can any of the England batsmen bat like Pujara, basically, and go down the pitch to the spinning ball, Max?
I think they have the ability to do it, but they need more practice. would be the short answer. I think like they showed that they're willing to do it, particularly with Pope and Lawrence. But I think where the difference is and the gulf in classes between them and people like Pujara is being able to tick the scoring rate over, because even when England were digging in that middle period, the runs weren't coming, and that's where that just lapse of concentration and letting one of those straight balls pin you or do some sort of stupid down the wicket shot, and you know, suddenly the score doesn't look too clever. Whereas if you can keep it ticking, it gives you a little bit more control as the batting side.
For most of your reasons there, I had actually come to the no conclusion. So I think Pujara's great skill, particularly with that coming down the wicket thing that he does, is that he very rarely gets out to it, and he quite regularly scores at least a run. And if you've got basically a risk-free way of scoring a run, then it means you don't get the accumulation, that kind of pressure effect.
Yeah.
And that means you don't have to go down the wicket and play the big heave-ho back over the bowler's head, because you can do what Pujara does, which is just flick it into the leg side, and you know,
and
half
it makes,
the time he does
it also
that.
Makes the bowler more likely to get their length wrong, and you know, you can punish the ball.
Yeah, and it's really hard if you don't do anything stupid once you've started going down the wicket. It's quite hard to be out, actually. Like, it takes something a little bit unusual. Pujara's probably the best in the world at utilizing that technique. So if England are all aspiring to be him or set that as the benchmark, I don't think they'll quite get
there. If you dropped a couple of those players in Indian first class cricket and made them do it for 3 or 4 years, they might get there, but that's never going to happen. So
does that happen really? So Pujara is coming across and playing in England this summer. I think Akshar Patel is as well, and you've kind of see it. Kohli was lined up to play for Surrey last year or the year before. Has there ever been a case where the England team are going out and you're seeing someone like Ollie Pope go and play for one of the first-class teams in India?
So obviously there's the IPL, but I think the times that has happened, I think Sri Lanka is where people have gone. So I think Ravi Papara did a series in Sri Lankan first-class cricket. Okay. I think there's probably a couple of issues there. I don't know whether like English players are allowed in the Ranji Trophy. I don't even know if they have overseas players. But also there's the financial implications, which are a reality. I think the average wage, we did talk about this ages ago on this podcast, I think the average wage for an Indian first class cricketer is something like £16,000 a year. Now it's not loads in the UK, but it's significantly more than that. And I don't know whether, and to get an English first class player to go over to India to play, you'd have to incentivize it a little bit more. So I just don't know if the sort of financials fair on that exactly work, or if it's even allowed.
You see people going over and doing it in grade cricket, don't you? They go and practice you do, in Australia but a little bit. So perhaps some of the top club teams in India might be able to get some.
Well, probably the way to do it is through England's A setup and the under 21s or whatever. It's so that the first time that an English player bats in the subcontinent isn't a test match or a warm up to a test match. And I think that happened to Dom Sibley and it happened to Crawley. And you know, like Sibley's shown signs that he can adjust to it, but he's like playing his fifth match or 10th match or something in India and Sri Lanka. It's not ideal, is it? Anyway, should we talk quickly about India's batting then? Because England were bowled out eventually, which brought Shubman Gill and Rohit Sharma to the crease, I think most people were pretty downbeat from an England perspective on England's hopes at that point in the game. But Anderson, he did some stuff, didn't he, Ross? And I should England fans be hopeful now?
I think it's always important to kind of get that wicket, especially after being pulled out on the first day for 204 or whatever it was. England's big thing is taking those early wickets. I said it last test that England are only in this game if they pull a rabbit out of the hat kind of thing, and get India out for less than 200. I'll be very surprised if that happens. I think this is a good enough batting deck. I think England picked a lineup that was geared up to play on a third and fourth day pitch, and I'm not convinced that they're going to have the firepower to break that top five of India. And I think what we could probably see is India batting England out of the game tomorrow.
Max, Anderson's good, isn't he?
He just does it, doesn't he? He does it wherever you put him, whichever country you put him, however old he is, whoever he's playing, whatever ball colour, he's just great.
Yes,
we are gonna miss him big time.
Yeah, Ross, I do think you might be right, but let's make some official predictions for tomorrow's day before we wrap up this recap. Max, what do you think will happen tomorrow? So we've said India are probably on top. Do England have a route back in, and how can they get back in if so?
Well, you've let it slip there already, haven't you? England's route back in is the man himself, surely. A nice 5 for 8 on a. I can't see much other than India ending the day on like 350 for 5 or something. But I think England's route back in is probably Jack Leach. If England are going to get there, I think a devastating spell from Jack Leach is probably what we need. Don Bessie's one over this evening has suggested that he is broken and that we have ruined his brain. So hopefully he can have a nice long sleep and dust that one off. But
It is mad that they picked Don Bessie again. Genuinely, when he was on this team sheet, I was just like, why are you putting him through it?
Well, you know, England. That's what we did. Yeah. Ross, is there a route back for England here? Or so you both basically said 350 for 5 is what's going to happen tomorrow.
I just think we're kind of waiting. Like Rohit Sharma's been the one kind of leading the way. We're inevitably waiting for a magnificent Kohli century just to rub salt in the wound of the England fans.
Yeah.
And then I think it'd be, even from just a neutral perspective, it might be nice to see Rahane actually hit some runs because I think he's a good player and we'll see it. But yeah, if England come out all guns blazing, there's a chance, but I think it'll peter out and we're going to get pummeled into the dirt.
Yeah, I'd probably say that's 3 of us. I mean, Don Bess is over.
He might be
Don
quite
Bess
good.
Don Bess is over this evening, suggested that England basically have 2 frontline bowlers. And that's not an ideal situation to be in, is it? When, you've got Rohit and Pujara at the crease. That's it.
Well, that's the thing, actually, right, Jack. If we don't manage to bowl them out for like 250 odd, they're all going to be knackered anyway. So by the time it gets past that point, we're stuffed.
Right, Ross, messages for our listeners and then we'll wrap up this show.
Yeah, like and subscribe on YouTube. Follow us at the Cricket Pod on Twitter and Instagram and leave us a review on Apple.
Yep, do all that. Do it on both. Review us on Apple, subscribe on Apple, and subscribe on YouTube and Spotify and become a real hero for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening or watching. We'll be back tomorrow to celebrate Rohit's second century of the series. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.